Six podcast COVID edition. Happy Halloween to everybody. Hopefully there's no COVID on your candy, because there is COVID on Nebraska's football schedule. I'm Sam McEwen. Tom Chattel joining us today. I appreciate that. And Evan Bland. And everything is fine, Land, with his background there. Everything is not fine, obviously, for Husker football, because they don't get to play their home opener this weekend against Wisconsin, because the Badgers on Wednesday canceled the game because they had too many COVID cases. They had 12 at the time. They have 15 now, 8 of which are coaches, which is a significant outbreak among the coaching staff. I think that's rare, even in this COVID time, to have that many coaches all at once have the virus. And so we wish the Wisconsin coaches, who are probably at greater physical risk, and Wisconsin players, a quick and fast recovery. We hope they're able to play against Purdue, because why would we want anyone to not play a football game? We wouldn't. So hopefully they're able to do that as quickly as possible. As it relates to Nebraska, well, it was an interesting 24 hours, and we're going to get into that with Evan and Tom. Just about everything that went down this week, from the cancellation to Nebraska's attempt to schedule Tennessee Chattanooga. That'll become a footnote in Husker history, to where they're at now. And the fact that now they've got to sit at home and watch some games this weekend. And the fact that Scott Frost isn't talking about any of it until at least Monday. We'll get to that in a second, but we want to remind everybody that our sponsor for the Pick Six podcast is the Schwalbach Agency. Team Schwalbach is a family-owned Allstate insurance agency with 4 licensed insurance pros, saving thousands of Nebraska Husker fans money. They sell homeowner, auto, life, and flood insurance across Nebraska, and we also insure all the big boy toys, motorcycles, boats, RVs, and off-road vehicles. If you've had your roof replaced in the last 5 years, give Daryl Schwalbach, Kyle Schwalbach, Nancy Mossack, or Kyle Murdoch a call at 402-590-5200. They can help you save a bundle. Hopefully you can use your big boy toys this weekend, because Nebraska's not playing. If you've had your roof replaced, I told you about that, in the last 5 years, you can call them. They have free, no obligation insurance reviews and quotes. They're going to make sure all their fellow Nebraska fans are properly protected. You can contact Team Schwalbach at 402-590-5200 or www.nebraskaallstate.com. That's www.nebraskaallstate.com. Thank you to Team Schwalbach, our sponsor of the Pick Six podcast. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to kind of let you guys go. I'll start with Tom about everything that has happened this week. Over the weekend, we found out that Graham Mertz had tested positive for COVID on an antigen test. Then we found out, I think Monday, that Chase Wolf had likely tested positive. By Tuesday evening, there were saber rattlings that there weren't going to be a game this weekend. By Wednesday morning, that proved to be true. Wisconsin canceled its game with Nebraska. Nebraska then attempted to set up a non-conference game with Tennessee Chattanooga. The Big Ten said no, and here we are on Friday morning. Go.
Thank you. What a week. And, thankfully that this was not Nebraska that has had to go through all this. Although I just saw that the numbers of Lincoln are up again. So everybody stay safe this weekend. I don't blame Wisconsin for not playing. I think, everybody has to deal with this in their own way. And some people are just the way it is, are more cautious than others with COVID. You see it all the time. Again, I watched the World Series the other night, and one of the Dodgers, Justin Turner, came out of the guy with just tested positive for COVID, came out to celebrate with his teammates and wasn't wearing a mask half the time. So some people are going to live their lives no matter what. And some people are not going to are going to stay home and they're going to quarantine. Wisconsin is choosing to stay home. Now, was that Barry Alvarez and Paul Chryst? I'm guessing Paul Chryst probably said fine because he's got it. But I think this might have been at the higher level, the chancellor level at this. Who knows? I'm not sure that matters, but I have no problem with them not playing. I wish the Big Ten had stuck with the original schedule, and we'd have bye weeks, and we'd have wouldn't have to try to get Tennessee Chattanooga. Now my question is when they set up the schedule, did this come up, the idea of having a non-conference game? You know, maybe getting a quick sub? And if it didn't come up, why didn't somebody bring that up? I thought that would have been a good question to ask back then. And it could be that no Big Ten school would ever consider doing that, except one Big Ten school that we know very well. So, but did Nebraska bring that up? And did Nebraska ask the Big Ten before it went together? A lot of things had to happen fast Wednesday, and they got that game real quick. But if you knew ahead of time that you were going to get shut down, you wouldn't have even bothered trying to do all this. So I wonder if, you know, did Nebraska try to ask the Big Ten ahead of time? That's usually a pretty good idea. You know, if you're going to – sometimes the old saying is it's better to ask forgiveness than to ask permission. But I'm not sure Nebraska even cares about forgiveness right now either. So I don't know. I guess it seems like a lot of drama. I wonder if this could have been handled a long time ago.
Yeah, well, you know, the Big Ten, it was, what, July when they scrapped the original schedule, said they're going non-con only, and then it was another month until they came out with that, you know, we hardly knew ye six days worth of that flexible schedule that they had. You know, I look at it as kind of that case of, you know, the Big Ten had that policy in place since July. Nebraska wanted to test it, obviously being the first affected by a COVID cancellation. And the Big Ten just kind of said, you know, we're sticking with the plan. Like, it's such an interesting debate, I think, because you can look at it from Nebraska's perspective and totally get it. Like, you know, they were screwed again. They lost another game. And they, once again, were proactive and had an ability to set something up to do right by their fans. Excuse me. To do right by their fans, to do right by their players. And then the Big Ten said no. But again, you can look at it from the Big Ten's perspective too. This rule has been in place for months and months. And then Nebraska, from their perspective, comes along, challenges them again, makes them look like the bad guy when everybody's already agreed to it. It's a really – the marriage analogy is good because you can totally see, I think, where both sides are coming from. You know, locally, we see the fan – responses on social media and there's a certain perspective that comes with that. But I absolutely think both sides, you know, have an argument here. And ultimately the Big Ten said, look, we don't know where Tennessee Chattanooga's been. We don't want Nebraska coming down with some COVID cases that could potentially cost more Big Ten cancellations down the line. Now, could the Big Ten have been better about setting up a schedule as opposed to this 9 games in 9 week situation with no wiggle room? Absolutely. But that didn't happen, and so now they're trying to protect what they have, and I can understand that too.
Okay, so that's my quote. Evan, was that a rule in place? You could not play a non-conference game?
Yeah, that's what they said in July.
I'm saying when they did this new schedule, though, last month they got together, and okay, if you lose a game, I mean, could you play? I mean, I guess that's my question is, was that revisited? Did it have to be? And if Nebraska already knew you couldn't, why did they try?
my understanding was,
I know why, but I mean, they don't care. They don't like the Big Ten. But I mean, it seems like at some point, if you're going to stay in the Big Ten, probably have to follow the rules that they lay down, whether you like them or not.
Right. And my understanding was that they had just carried that policy over. I don't know if they revisited that. Sam, maybe you have a better sense of that in September, but you know, there's probably a sense, too, that maybe Nebraska knew, and this is an interesting idea, but that Nebraska knew the Big Ten would say no, but hey, let's put it out there publicly anyway to set a precedent that, okay, if Nebraska's not going to get this game, then nobody else is either. You know, the popular example thrown around has been Ohio State. If they need another game to make the college football playoff because of a cancellation, well, now the precedent's been set. So, you know, maybe as the joke goes, maybe Nebraska's playing, you know, 3D chess with this thing and getting something established here on the front end.
I think it was probably left unsaid. And it was left assumed.
I'm sorry.
No, I think it was left unsaid and left assumed. Go ahead, Tom. Go ahead. Okay. I think it was probably left unsaid and assumed at that particular time. So I'm sure Nebraska pressed the issue, pushed the issue, decided it was going to make the request. And, you know, I don't think maybe they thought it was going to be a yes answer, but I think they felt like they owed it to their players to at least give them a chance at playing a football game this weekend. And, you know, I think when you set everything that has happened in the Big Ten over the course of the last 8 or 9 years in terms of universities that have committed transgressions against the world at large, Nebraska's desire to play a football game is very, very low on the board. I mean, it's just not, it's not a significant issue. And of course, I've predicted this a long time ago, but I think you're going to see a completely different approach for basketball. Nebraska is proceeding with the intention of hosting at least a 12 team and potentially a 16 team MTE with basketball teams from 7 or 8 leagues in a basketball tournament 1 month from now around Thanksgiving. And the Big Ten just announced the ACC Big Ten Challenge. So there's this notion that it's all of that's going to be fine in basketball, but it isn't okay in football because of the number of team players. That's what I mean about, I don't think the Big Ten has necessarily thought its consistency of process out entirely. Like if the Big Ten said, hey, you know what, we're not playing any non-conference basketball games either. We're going to keep that all in conference as well. That would at least be consistent with the decision they've made in football, but they're not going to do that because everybody knows that when you do that, you hurt the resume of your teams. You eliminate the chance for them to play these cool games on ESPN against Duke and North Carolina, and you hurt your team's chances in the NCAA tournament. So the Big Ten is not going to do that. So I think some of it is just the consistency of approach hasn't been very good. Some of it is the Big Ten does not, and I know this based on having conversations with Nebraska officials in multiple sports, not just football, multiple sports, like 4 sports. They don't know what's going on. The Big Ten does not give them answers and does not give them clarity. And I've also talked to people who have followed the Big Ten and covered the Big Ten for decades, and they're like, it's never been like this. And I understand that the coronavirus provides a unique moment in history in terms of difficulty, but honestly, your communication when you're at home and you have an unlimited amount of time to like check your email, which you do, you're not spending any time at the water cooler, you're not spending any time traveling to and from work, the lack of clarity seems stranger in this moment. Like, I think all of us have been able to get busy work done more easier than we did before. I mean, Evan, you and I went to the Ohio State game this weekend. That's the fastest we've ever gotten done with writing about a game, right?
Oh, yeah.
We didn't have to spend an hour doing interviews on the field because they were on Zoom and we just sat and watched them and transcribed them as we wrote and we were done. Mm-hmm. So the idea that the Big Ten has a harder time communicating or coming up with protocols right at this moment, as hard as COVID is, the one thing it affords you to do is to stay at home. You don't lose any time traveling. I mean, you've no car time. You have no water cooler time. So the Big Ten hasn't been able to give them answers. And I think that part is really frustrating to a lot of people of like, we don't know what the Big Ten thinks because they're not telling us. And again, this isn't just football. This is smaller sports where, believe me, the university presidents and chancellors are not weighing in. Like, this is the Big Ten handling this. This isn't Rebecca Blank or Morton Shapiro that have to sign off on it. So, you know, I think that's an ongoing issue within the league. And I think Nebraska's just frustrated by the lack of clarity. Like, the story is, well, hey, I mean, of course Nebraska couldn't do this. And I'm telling you, I don't think Nebraska knew that. I don't think that there's been the kind of understanding, so to speak, that you would have expected. And the other thing, and I think this is important, and I'd love to have Tom talk a little bit more about it, is there's this impression that that Nebraska and Big Ten are on the outs, which is fair, but that the rest of the Big Ten is aligned against Nebraska in this, and that Nebraska is the school that is sticking out like a sore thumb. I'm not ready to like write about it, but my impulse is that's not true. That a lot of these athletic directors, they're with Nebraska. And there's nothing they can do about it at the moment because it's a hell of a hard time for everybody involved. But I think this moment, this last 6 months, has exposed, okay, the league has changed, guys. It's not the same league that some national columnists keep writing about. It's not. And they can have that impression and that perspective, but I'm telling you, I think that comes from a perspective that is 15 years old. I don't think the league is in that same place anymore. I just don't. And I think you're going to see over the next year or so the evolution of the Big Ten that's going to be a lot more like Ohio State and a lot less like Northwestern.
Well, if they're what Nebraska, have somebody stand up and say so. I mean, where are
Ohio State has. They did it
right,
again.
I mean, where's everybody, if everybody else is with them, where are they? I mean, I don't hear it. I guarantee you that the fans are against them, so there's – the people with the schools and there's the fans, but I don't know. It's the communication issue is whereas the Big Ten has never been very good at those kind of things. I don't think it's it was always one of those leagues where if you covered one of their games, you weren't going to get a lot of information. So
It does seem that the Big 12 was a lot better at doing media days and like press, like teleconferences and all that. The Big 10 ended its teleconferences last year. Their media days have always been a little, in my opinion, underwhelming.
Yeah.
But again, my sense of this situation is that it's worse than it's ever been. And in order to get a comment from Kevin Warren, you're not really going through the Big Ten anymore. You're going through a crisis communication firm who may or may not get us something today. I mean, I've asked for that firm to provide us with a statement from the Big Ten. You can't depend on the Big Ten anymore. And that's a problem. There's something not right in the league. And I think the ADs know it. I think the presidents who have had a horrible year, and it's not their fault, because this stuff is flying around on their campus. They've got to care about that first. I just don't think they're as attuned to the Big Ten athletic aspect being as poor as it's been at this moment. The presidents have a lot more to deal with than just, is the sports league going right? But the athletic directors, that's all they think about. And I just don't think that at this moment, most of those ADs are real happy with the Big Ten and Kevin Warren. And I think in the offseason, you're going to see a shift away from this, we're the Big Ten and we'll do what we want and we don't know what we're doing, to we're the Big Ten and we're going to do what our ADs kind of try to tell us to do. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like Nebraska's not as alone as it seems. I just don't think they're quite as isolated as some of the national media has made it out to be.
Well, I don't know how that'll change. I don't think a bunch of ADs are going to change it. It's at the presidential level. And they're certainly busy with COVID, but they don't generally get involved. I mean, of course, they haven't had a chance to. They had Jim Delaney doing everything. But my sense is this is a league that's always done things a certain way. If the communication needs to be improved, I think that can happen. You oust the commissioner. The presidents really care who the commissioner is. Maybe not. I don't know. If things are that bad around the league, then I think, yeah, you could see a new commissioner possibly. But the question is this where Nebraska needs to be? And how big is the academic the piece of the puzzle? Would Ted Carter ever let them leave? be a hard pill to swallow. The UNMC, they really want to, you know, they feel like there's a lot of potential there. The Big Ten, the money, the worldwide, the land, or the grant money, that kind of stuff. It's very powerful. There's a lot of programs around the world where and this could benefit UNMC, I think, down the road. So
I agree.
But Nebraska's about football. Okay, Nebraska didn't make the move for UNMC or the academics or, you know, old Father Hall. It made the move for football, and it can make another move because of football. So I think Scott Frost will have a hands all over that. If there's a move to be made, there'll be a very, very interesting conversations about this because, you know, you don't want to be, you don't want to be the president who takes Nebraska out of the Big Ten. You also don't want to be the president who doesn't take care of football and maybe watches Scott Frost go somewhere else because he's frustrated. So, you know, you don't want, there's a lot of things going on here. The question is, where would they go? There is no place to go right now. The Big 12 doesn't seem to be in the mood for expanding. But I have to think that could change if the right teams came up. So, and I think there's an interesting, you know, theory out there that college sports is going to change. There's going to be another major shift in realignment, and it may go back to some sort of regional setup, or maybe, you know, there wouldn't be conferences. There would just be sort of like scheduling arrangements or so on and so forth that make more sense for travel. And the TV money is going to be different and all that stuff. So I don't know. I would not say Nebraska will be in the Big Ten forever. I would never say that. I think a lot would have to happen, though, for them to leave. But I think that the climate right now is this is not a good fit.
See, I mean, I've always been of the mindset that, like, if you're going to make a big decision, like, you need some space between kind of whatever that event was, you know, before you come to that decision. And yeah, I mean, I think the last 6 months, like, sure, Nebraska has been thwarted multiple times now in its attempts to play football kind of outside the league structures. But, you know, I just think big picture, like, when you look at it, we all knew coming into this thing that 2020 was kind of a free pass, kind of a throwaway year in the sense that everything was so altered. You know, I think you can look at this thing in a year and say, okay, maybe Nebraska played 6 games in 2020. Nobody lost eligibility. The financial hit was tough. Everybody took that. And then you move on. Like, the Big Ten money, what they're getting annually, over $50 million a year from that league for the share, like, that's significant. That's allowing them to pay top coaches. That's allowing them to bring in guys like Fred Hoiberg, paying more for basketball than they ever have, paying more for football than they have. That allows them to start building competitively, hopefully at a national level, with that money. And if you leave over this, like, that just seems, you know, like it just seems like a big overreaction to me. So I would hope that in the long term, when there's some space between this season, cooler heads will prevail. I think what this does show is a mismatch in priorities. Nebraska's priority is to play football. The Big Ten's priority is maybe a bit more corporate than that. But I don't know that that's enough to pull the plug on this thing and go wherever you would go. Like, I think a little more distance ultimately is going to, you know, win the day.
I think it'd be fair to say that Nebraska's mindset, setting aside the priorities, I would say that Nebraska's focus, right? Like, it's what it wanted to do, what it prioritized was much more clarified early in this process back in April than the Big Ten. I don't really think, and again, I do not fault Big Ten presidents and chancellors for not thinking about football in April. I don't. Like, I understand where Nebraska's coming from, and I respect that perspective, and I respect the alignment from the president down to the football coach to the team or whatever. But I wouldn't necessarily require every other team. And, you know, Tom knows this. That isn't true of every team in the Big Ten, Big 12 either. Like, I'm pretty confident that every Big 12 program wasn't thinking about football in April during the coronavirus. It probably wasn't the number one priority at Kansas, for example. And so, you know, like, I think you have to have grace there. But I'm not sure that it ever locked deeply into focus for some of the Big Ten presidents and chancellors, really at any time. And that's where you rely on a commissioner to organize those thoughts and present the vision to you in a way that doesn't take up 40% of your mental bandwidth. And that's where I think they miss Delaney. And I'm not trying to put all this on Kevin Warren, but in some ways he is the orchestrator. He is the person leading the orchestra of presidents and chancellors. And he's the one who's giving them the information and synthesizing that information in a way and presenting it so that there is something close to a binary choice, right? Because high-level people like university presidents who have a whole shitload of things to worry about need to sometimes be presented with binary choices, not seven, but just two. And I just don't think that happened with any consistency from Warren's end at the very beginning. And I think athletic directors have seen that. And I think as the time goes on, presidents will see it too. They'll be like, all right, when we go through this again, we have to have a better mechanism set up to figure out how we're going to make these decisions versus a whole bunch of Zoom meetings where only one guy's involved in the meetings and there's a lot of confusion. And I understand people's feeling about Nebraska and the Big Ten in this particular moment and how different they are. And I could be wrong. I might be wrong. But I do have the sense that it isn't just Nebraska that is looking at this moment and saying something about the league's setup has to change because this didn't work. And I think Nebraska at least owes it, and I think they'll obviously do this, but Nebraska fans owe it to an offseason to see what happens. Because I just don't anticipate the Big Ten going, the only problem we had this year was with Nebraska. Everything else was fine. I don't think that's going to be the conclusion. And although I understand why Nebraska pushed in this circumstance, I think the presumption that Nebraska is all alone and isolated in this process is wrong. I think they've got more allies than maybe they realize. And I think that's going to emerge as a truth here in 6 to 9 months. If it doesn't, then I think you have to really have a five-year thought plan about how are we going to rectify, or how are we going to reconcile with the league, how are we going to get on the same page, or if we can't, what are we going to do? But I just got a feeling the offseason is going to look different for the Big Ten, and they're going to say, we got a lot of egg on our face last year from both sides, people who thought we were making a mistake pausing football and people who thought we were making a mistake playing it. And we've got to come up with a new plan because what we did last year didn't work.
Well, that's the case. The Big Ten is going to be a very messed up place for a long, long time because Nebraska
is might be a better place than it is. But it's messed up now, isn't it?
But people are going to be fighting because not everybody's going to think like Nebraska in the Big Ten. First of all, there's too many schools. Second of all, they do care more about football than most of these schools. They just do. And right.
But I think that was true in the Big 12, too. I don't think it was – think any school in the Big 12 other than Oklahoma and Texas cares as much about football.
The Big 12, though, is not like the Big 10 in a lot of ways. I mean, the Big 12, you got KU, the Harvard on the call. But there aren't many KUs in the Big 12. You know, Colorado always thought that they were this sort of, you know, a different place too, academically, and that's fine. But the mentality of the Big 12 is, let's play football. And you're down in Texas and Oklahoma, you're thinking football almost all year. So Nebraska is more of a fit in the SEC, where everything is directed toward that one thing. I have no problem with that. I love football.
Right.
Ted is not that way. And whether they get a new commissioner or, by the way, whether they get as a commissioner is going to be who the presidents want. And somebody that's going to answer to the presidents. They're now in charge. They will not get another Jim Delaney type. So they will get somebody that is going to answer to them. So I don't know what that means. But I'm saying is, yeah, there might be a shift in the offseason, but Big Ten is still going to be the Big Ten.
You don't think they take Jim Delaney back, like, right now if, like, in a fictional universe he had never retired?
I don't – him, yes, because they got relationships, but
– right.
You know, I think they're in charge now, and it's hard to. I saw that in the Big Eight for years, and the Big 12 did not want powerful commissioners.
Right,
never had them. You know, Steve Hatchell for a while, but you know the Dan Beebe was there for a reason. So. Right. Right. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I don't think this is, you know, this is all fun to talk about. Yeah, you know, realignment, we all love it. It's all War of the Worlds, you know, type stuff. Who's, you know, Napoleon, you know, taking over countries and all that stuff. It's interesting, but is it going to happen? I don't know. I would never rule anything out, but I think it would be hard. I agree. I think Nebraska has to win. It'll feel better if they win. But certain things are always going to be there. For Nebraska, the question will be, how much can we tolerate in terms of travel, how much can we afford? Because this is – everybody's going to take a hit. And what sort of voice do we have? That's always been a very important thing for Nebraska, to have a voice, a very, you know, a big voice in things, which they had in the Big 12 when they left. So I don't know. I think could it happen one day? Yes.
Yeah.
Is it going to happen anytime soon? No.
I think the idea that I understand that the notion that Nebraska had a bigger voice than the Big 12. I understand that. And that right now,
a lot bigger than they thought. They thought Texas ran it. Well, Nebraska was a big dog in the Big Ten. They're not a big dog in the Big Ten, and they never will be.
Well, they're not a big dog, but the big dog agrees with them. And I just can't poo-poo that or dismiss it away when the biggest power in the league, and it is, Ohio State is the biggest power in the league.
Well, how's that working out for them today? They didn't get to play their game tomorrow.
I understand that. And like I said, I just don't think I don't think the presidents were going to make an adjustment based on what had happened in July and August. I understand that. And so I don't think they were going to alter their plan.
Right.
But I do think that the identity of the league is not – how do I put this? I think Twitter is a really small universe, and I think it's a little smaller than we realize.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think sometimes it's an echo chamber of sort of group thoughts. And I think one of the things about this particular situation is that I'm sure the Big Ten, with people within that organization, want to present the story of we're the Big Ten and we're not going to change. And Nebraska is this, and there's a difference, and it's not a fit. And I understand all that. But the reality is that Ohio State, at this point, its football program, is a lot closer to Nebraska's mindset than it is to any other program in the Big Ten. And Ohio State's not leaving the Big Ten, and the Big Ten's not kicking Ohio State out. And if the Big Ten has a problem with Ohio State, it has a problem with every team in the league. And once that happens, the league's going to change. Like, it's not going to be, now Ohio State's a problem, and we're going to make sure that they know how the operation works. It's not going to default to, again, Rebecca Blank and Morton Shapiro to define how the Big Ten looks, when part of what Jim Delaney did is he brought so much money into the league and he changed the landscape of it to such an extent that now the Big Ten is a league that cares about winning and sports and money. And you can't just put that toothpaste back in the tube. I mean, that's part of what happened. And so I
don't think the Big Ten does care about winning. I think Ohio State does. They always have. They're the one program that's never had a down period in college football.
That's right. They haven't.
They cared when Woody Hayes was there. It was Ohio State ran the league with Bo. And so it was like Oklahoma, Nebraska, and the Big Eight. Those two ran things. And, you know, Ohio State, the Big Ten's not going to have a problem with them because Ohio State, they're Ohio State. They can do whatever they want.
Well, they've earned that. I think the league is shifting.
We'll see. I think it's
yeah, we'll see.
I think it's still there. And I also think Ryan Day yesterday was great. I think that was his apology to Nebraska for the last touchdown. He came right out and made sure he patted Nebraska on the head. You know, good job. We're behind you.
I think that's possible. I think he was.
Do I think Nebraska is all by themselves? That may be what Nebraska wants to think. I don't know. I don't think it matters.
I think Nebraska probably has more allies than Nebraska may know that it has allies at the athletic director level. I think they do have allies at that level.
Right. But again, actions speak louder than words. And I've seen a lot of actions. I've seen Nebraska try to do stuff and everybody just kind of stand by and watch them. Ohio State did not, but Iowa, for all their the parents got involved early, they didn't hear a peep out of Iowa the whole time. So yeah. You know, where was their pushback? I didn't hear any of it.
Iowa may very well have a new head coach next year.
Well, they have their own stuff to deal with. Yeah,
I got emails.
I was
telling me to tell Nebraska to shut up and fall in line with everybody else. Well, okay, fine, but you know, again, follow the money, follow the actions.
Yeah. I just get a sense the silent majority of the Big Ten on this is much, much more in Nebraska's corner and Nebraska may know that. I don't view Nebraska's athletic administrator, Bill Moo, Scott Frost, Ronnie Green. I think they're fairly shrewd people. And even if they knew they were going to get a no, I think, like you said, they wanted to put it on the record that this, the Big Ten said no to this. And again, I appreciate some of the commentary from the national media. But I don't pay a lot. I don't give it a lot of credence as it relates to inner league politics. I think the Big Ten cares about what Dan Wetzel thinks. I don't know that the athletic directors do. And so I think the difference is important in the sense that I think the silent majority of the Big Ten is looking at what's happening with Nebraska and looking at what happened with the Big Ten's vote back in August and saying, when we have a chance to do this again, we're going to change things, and it's not going to look like this. Now, maybe I'm wrong. But I think that has a possibility of happening in the offseason where they're like – and we may already be seeing it with basketball because they haven't messed with basketball, not the way that they did with football. They haven't done that. They're going to let teams play – I think they're going to let teams play MTEs. They're going to – Nebraska have this giant – you know, I think they're going to let Nebraska have this giant 16-team tournament. You know, like that seems – doesn't that seem to fly completely in the face of the decision that was just made yesterday?
I can't explain it. Conferences treat the sports differently. They do. Maybe the basketball is more of a, okay, it's a bubble situation. It's everybody's there. It's, you know, in football you have all these players and I can't explain it.
But I can't either.
It is different. And
other than I've always believed that most conference officials like basketball.
Also cares more about the Final Four than it does national championship football.
Right.
It was the Rose Bowl. The Big Ten is more of a basketball league than it is football.
I agree with
you. That may have been Delaney.
I agree with that. I think that's true of most athletic. I think that's true of most athletic administrators because I think they're more basketball than football. And honestly, I think it's true of most media. I think most media like college basketball more than college football.
You've got more schools in the Big Ten who want to go to the Final Four.
Yeah. No, that's true.
Indiana,
that's
Illinois, Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State.
Yes.
Iowa wants to do well in basketball. Iowa just wants to be Iowa.
Right. No, that's a great point.
Wisconsin wants to be Wisconsin. Oops. They want to go to the Final Four.
Yep.
So it's different. And I can't explain it. Whether, you know, Jim Delaney was a basketball guy or who knows.
But That's very true. I think the piece that plays into that is, like, at a certain point for football, don't you just kind of know that there's a cap? Like, if you're Iowa or you're Wisconsin, like, what are your options? You can be Iowa or Wisconsin or what? Like, you're not in recruiting territory. You look at the Clemsons and the Ohio States, like, you got to know at a certain point you're not going to compete for that. But in basketball, right, it takes one or two guys. You recruit one or two guys, you can make a run. The tournament's crazy. It's named that way. Like, it's just a totally different deal. You know, I think Nebraska's the same way to a certain point. Like, you know, the basketball team in theory could get two or three guys. The baseball team could get a handful of guys and make a College World Series run. Like, outside of football, it feels like there's more hope because college football's been so top heavy the last decade.
In Nebraska, it's the opposite. They think football should always be on top, and they think basketball can never do anything.
It hasn't.
Weird.
I think Corbin's going to change that.
You don't understand until you have it. And then once you get there, I guarantee you, once Nebraska, if they ever win a damn NCAA game, they will crave it. They'll want to do more and more and more. So,
That's very true. From what I understand, talking to people related to Wisconsin, it's worth noting that they think they have a really good team. And I don't think it's their best team, but they think they have a really, really good team. And watching Wisconsin again, I watched it a little bit with Evan in a bar at Ohio State in a relatively empty bar. And then I went and watched the game again. And I'll say this, their defense has got unbelievably good players on their defensive line. I mean, it's very underrated. Their defensive line, in my opinion, was better than Ohio State's based on what I saw. And so they would have been a bear for Nebraska to handle, defense to offense. I think their defense is really good. I think Nebraska would have had a hard time scoring 24, 28 points on that defense. Conversely, I think Nebraska's defense would have done a pretty good job against Wisconsin's offense, but we won't see it. Because when I watched the Illinois game again, I'm watching Wisconsin's defense, I'm like, first of all, they're playing an actual 3-4 and not this goofy 2-4-5 thing they played last year because they had so many linemen who were hurt. The linemen they played were outstanding. They were excellent. And I was like, oh, man, you know, Nebraska's going to – they have their hands full playing this team, playing Wisconsin's defense. I still don't know what Wisconsin's offense would have done. They probably wouldn't have been very good, honestly, with Danny Vandenboom and, you know, the three-headed monster that they're running at running back who isn't as good as Jonathan Taylor or Dedrick Mills for that matter. But that game's under the water. And I'm sure Nebraska deeply wanted to play it. Like, if it had been reversed and they'd beaten Wisconsin in week one and week two was Ohio State, do you really think they would have – they probably were like, oh no. You know, like, oh, shucks.
Yeah, we'll never know, will we? Yeah. We'll never know. But
they got to play Ohio State, but they didn't get to play Wisconsin, and I'm sure they would rather have reversed those roles.
Right.
Anything in the Ohio State game that encouraged you, talking about actual football? Did you see anything that you were like, yeah, that looks pretty good?
What?
In the Ohio State game with Nebraska.
Oh, absolutely. The physicality is much better than it's been.
Yeah, I agree.
I was ready to pump up the season until Martinez dropped the ball on the ground. Then there was the delay of game penalty coming out of a timeout.
Yeah.
And then they missed a touchdown pass. I'm like, this is not different. This is the same. So till it's different, we have to expect, you know, program is not fixed. So,
but the Lions actually looked pretty good. I thought
they did last year too. I thought they held their own against Wisconsin and Iowa last year. But they, you know, the special teams things got in the ways and all that stuff. But I think it's different. It is different. And I'll tell you, that front seven, look kind of mean and nasty. You know, I'm writing about the 92 Halloween game for tomorrow. One of the things Trev Alberts told me was that Tom Osborne's goal going into the Colorado game was to be the most physical team on the field. And they always try to do that, but they knew it would be a bigger – they put more emphasis on it. And it reminded me of the 78 Oklahoma game. And, you know, Nebraska in the Big Ten – the Big Ten West is eventually going to have to take a stand, put their to kind of dig their heels in the ground and take a stand and say, we're going to be the most physical team on the field. And I don't believe they've done that in a long, long time. That's what I was kind of hoping for tomorrow. It could have been a statement game against Wisconsin. Winning, yes. But at least, you know, taking a stand and say, we're not going to take this anymore.
Right.
We're going to take it to you. And they haven't done that in a long, long time. So if you're going to stay in this league, that's got to happen a lot.
Yeah.
So it's not the program that Scott Frost envisions. Not totally. It's what he envisions is Oregon only more physical. So I think they're still a better fit in the Big 12 for that reason. But we're in the Big 10.
No, I agree with you there. Yes. Nebraska, when Frost came, it looked like a Big 12 team in the Big 10.
And
is that changing?
I think
I don't know.
That's an interesting thing to have in the Big 10 West. It's probably a pretty good approach, but you better have a defensive line to get the other guys off the field.
Yep.
And that's Scott Frost, you know, quarterbacks, receivers, and defensive line. Those are the three, have to be the three priorities in this program. But on to Northwestern. You guys will have fun next week. You have your deep dish pie, your big old pizza pie. Remember, it's
– They closed all the restaurants in Chicago, incidentally.
Well,
at least last week.
Remember, when you have the deep dish pizza pie,
I love
it. Like it's apple pie. You can't have three pieces. You know, you never have three pieces of apple pie. You just have one.
Evan doesn't like deep dish pizza.
People have three pieces of deep dish pizza. How do you do that? It's not normal pizza.
You can't do that. It's called being fat, like me. Evan doesn't like it. Evan doesn't like it. He likes thin crust.
I like thin, too.
Thin crust or New York style?
Well, Will Malnati's has got to be open, right?
I don't know, man. Like,
is Malnati's still open?
I hope. It's not a question of, like, what I mean, I'm not sure any of them will be open.
I think Giordano's is open, isn't it?
Yeah, drive-through. Oh, you can get carry-out from pizza places. It's just, I mean, COVID is hitting our country really hard, and I think people need to recognize that. Honestly, it's hitting Nebraska just as hard as it's hitting Wisconsin, if you're talking just per capita rates and all that. Right. Maybe Wisconsin's getting hit a little harder. I don't want to be unfactual there, but people got to be really smart and safe at this moment.
Well, hit Mustard's last stand for me.
And, okay. If it's open, I plan on going there. It's one of my five favorite, restaurants on the Big Ten tour is getting a Chicago dog minus tomatoes at Mustard's last stand.
That's a great place. All right. I gotta go, guys. Thanks.
All right.
Later.
Evan, you're writing a story on the front seven. I don't know if you watched the game again. I did
a little bit.
They look pretty good. I mean, I mean, again, they weren't friggin' Alabama, but no. They looked like they were in position a lot more. Like the way that the run fits are supposed to work, it just looked way, way better. Like it looked like an interlocking part as opposed to, hey, there's this giant wedge of Huskers in the middle of a pie, like in the middle of a play, and the play bounces and there's no one there. Like that didn't happen. It looked pretty dang good.
It did. I thought, you know, the last 2 years, this 3-4, it's been two things. It's been the fits, like you said, to the point to where PJ Fleck said last year, yeah, we counted on them being out of position, essentially. But the physical side, too. You know, Scott Frost in his first year here, 2018, saying, yeah, Iowa just pushed them around. And then a little bit less last year, but they still did, you know, teams still did. And then this year they looked like they belonged, they, at least in the opener. And, you know, the defensive line, I think we talked a lot in the off season about how are they going to replace three starters who are now on NFL rosters. And, you know, I feel like after the first game, you feel pretty decent about that, about how they've developed guys, and particularly Casey Rogers and Ty Robinson. Those are guys who really took strides in the offseason. Coaches felt better about, we saw that
right
demonstrated. You know, and in some ways, this extra long offseason is probably as good for the front seven as anybody in terms of, I mean, you have no excuse for missing your assignments, for missing kind of knowing where you need to be. Like, they did it every day on Zoom. And if you can't physically practice every day, you can still go over stuff every day. And so, like, it felt like they had a better grasp on things. And part of it's the third year in the system for some of these guys. To me, the thing that you're still nervous about going forward is the depth, particularly at linebacker. You know, Feldarius Payne was a nice surprise on the outside.
He plays hard.
He does.
That's part of it.
He does.
They got a guy that plays his ass off, and he played hard.
That JUCO mentality. He brings that. You know,
I don't all have that mentality coming out of JUCO, but he does.
No, they don't. He does.
And you wrote a good story about him, about part of why he is the way he is.
Yeah. I mean, he had a rough go of it, man. The story that stands out to me that he said was, you know, academically, he always thought he was going to go into the military. And so he didn't really put a ton of effort into his schoolwork. But by the time he was a junior and he started to come on, and people were like, okay, you know, he could be a good football player. He tells the story of how North Carolina sent a couple of coaches. That's where he's from, on the East Coast over there. And they had a few coaches come out. And he didn't even talk to him. He saw them look at his transcripts, his grades, and they left. They didn't even stay to follow up because they knew, or they considered him to be a lost cause. So that stuck with him. You know, he went from there. He excelled in 2 years at a good junior college at Lackawanna there. They played for a national title. So, yeah, he's one of those guys who, like, just doesn't take it for granted. He plays with that chip on his shoulder, and now that he's at Nebraska, he still does, and that's what you want. But he has a little bit of depth on the outside there, but inside backer, you know, if Honus or Colin Miller had gotten hurt, you know, Luke Reimer wasn't there, you wonder, they would have had to probably dip into Garrett Snodgrass or
– And they did late.
And then, yeah, sure. I mean, when the game was settled, but – that to me is kind of that area where you worry about a little bit with the depth. But for the opener and the, you know, for Nebraska's defensive standards, they played a pretty small amount of snaps, and it worked out well for them. So definitely an encouraging sign.
Yeah, you need to – I mean, part of it is that some of these young kids on the 2019 class that are not playing, they're just going to need game reps over and over and over again. Like, I thought Garrett Nelson played pretty well. I think he played – I don't know if they'd say he played his best game ever, but I thought he looked pretty good. But he played last year, like he was in it, and he made mistakes and he made good plays, and you know, you learn. I thought Casey Rogers fought well. I think Damian Daniels, for what they want him to do, did a pretty good job. You know, Ben Stille is who he is at this point. He gives you everything he's got. There's going to be plays when he doesn't win. I thought Ty Robinson was hot and cold, but when he was hot, he made that TFL. So I think the thing with Robinson is you're going to get a couple of splash plays a game. And that one play where he beat the crap out of a future NFL lineman and he got a TFL, like that's what he's capable of. Now you got to get more consistency with him. But if he can produce one of those every game, you'll take it. I think that's kind of what they'd like from Damian Daniels, but they haven't really gotten that, but they have gotten it. They did get it at least in game one from Robinson. Thought Keem Green held up. I mean, he battled. But I thought the linebackers played better, right? So, like, I thought the D-line did a nice job, but I thought, you know, Miller played really well. I thought Honus looked fast. He looked like the guy they recruited. I thought Doman played pretty well. I thought Tanner
did well.
Played hard and, you know, was in position. I thought Nelson played well. I thought Henrich in his first action, there was a play. I can't remember what it was. He got, you know, I think Fields got him and juked him or something. But that's Justin Fields, right? So those things will all tighten up. But part of what you hope to see, or at least this is just my opinion, my amateur opinion, what you hope to see in a 3-4 over time is the gaps between those outside linebackers and the inside linebackers, that the gaps start to tighten. And they tighten and they tighten, especially against the run, to the point where those little gaps by the midseason, they're not there anymore. And you know, your outside linebackers have length and they're closing like a vice, and the inside linebackers aren't overrunning plays and they're not getting bunched up like they did last year, and plays aren't bouncing outside. Because in theory, a 3-4 should be a damn good run defense. Like, you should be able to stop the run in a 3-4 because you got four guys roaming instead of three. The knock against the 3-4 in the past has been, if you don't have an elite pass rusher at one of those outside linebacker spots, can be hard because you got to bring people from depth and then quarterbacks see it, et cetera, et cetera. They did get three sacks on Fields, which I thought was impressive, and almost got a fourth. But, you know, they still don't appear to have a great pass rusher, but you can live with that. Where they had to get better is run defense. And I felt like in game one, they just looked like they knew what they were doing.
That's what I was disappointed in, especially with this Wisconsin game getting canceled, was you think back on the 3 years Nebraska's been in a 3-4, obviously 2017 under Bob Diaco, different sort of scheme. But the last 3 years, each game against Wisconsin, you can point to a specific drive or two where the Badgers just said, you know what, screw it, we're going to run the ball, and we're going to pound it down your throat, and we're going to kill some clock, and we're going to score. And they've done that in each of the last 3 years when things were a little tough, or maybe they got cute, and then they kind of reset and did what they did. But it felt like this was a year I was really interested to see how the defense would hold up against Wisconsin when it did that this year, if it would be able to hold its own, to get a stop, to force Wisconsin to throw. I mean, it's been a long time since the Badgers have had to throw against Nebraska because they couldn't run. And so it's disappointing that we don't get to see that this week. But, you know, Northwestern, suddenly its offense looks alive again with some of its off-season changes. And so I guess we'll just have to wait.
Yeah. Well, they play Northwestern. Northwestern's got a big game on Saturday. I'm actually going to pick Iowa to win that game. I'm giving away one of my picks in our thing here, but if they win that game, if Northwestern wins it and they're 2-0, Northwestern might be the best team Nebraska has left to play. By the end of Saturday night, we're going to know a lot about Nebraska's remaining schedule. We will. Sure. We'll know a hell of a lot. We'll know if Iowa and Northwestern are kind of the same. We'll know if Northwestern goes in and beats Iowa by 14, then Nebraska's biggest game is the next one and not that game at Iowa. Because I think Iowa could take a big old slide if they lose, because they've had a hard 2020. And we'll have some – if Ohio State can't afford to, like, kiss anybody's rear end on their schedule, and that includes Penn State. So if they have a chance to kick Penn State into the earth, they will.
Sure.
They'll do it. They did it to Nebraska, and I understand Ryan Day apologized and all that. But 52-17 looks a little better than 45-17, and there won't be any apology after if it were 52-17 over Penn State. Those two programs don't like each other that much. If they can beat the crap out of Penn State, they will. And again, Penn State's had a hard year. Their top two running backs are out. Their best player opted out, which he could, Micah Parsons. They're down some players. They're not the same program they were last year or the year before that. And so if by the end of Saturday night we see a Penn State team that loses by 25, and we might, Nebraska fans cannot look at that game November 14th the same way. It's just not the same game. Nope. You're not playing the second scariest team in the league. So we'll know a lot about Nebraska's schedule by the end of Saturday night. I don't know what we'll know, but we'll know more. We'll know a lot more.
Yep.
Because we'll know if we'll know tonight, because we're recording this on a Friday. We'll know tonight if Minnesota's any fucking good. Sorry for the language. We'll know. if they don't run Maryland out of the gym or off the field or whatever, they got a problem. Maryland's bad.
They will, yeah.
I rewatched that game with Northwestern and Maryland, and I'm like, and I like Mike Locksley. I think he probably is going to recruit the guys that turn it around there. I don't know if he'll be the head coach, but they're getting good players on the recruiting trail. But I'm like, you, DJ Durkin screwed that program so much in what he did to it, and the fallout from it is that you just don't have guys on the field who have any experience. They're having to run dudes out there that are way too not ready to deal with Big Ten football. And so Minnesota should win by 30. But, you know, if it's like 24-18 or something, you should worry. Like, that would be concerning if Maryland scores 21 or 28 points. Because the Maryland team that I saw play Nebraska last year, you were there. Mm-hmm. That team was bad. Like, it was. And you, there was a shot of Mike Locksley during the game where he's just kind of shaking. You know, like, I feel you, man. You're like, your team is bad.
Can you believe that's the last game that Nebraska's won?
Yeah, well.
I mean, not that they've
only played two since, right?
They've played them since then. But think how long ago that was. They actually got to celebrate a win.
I know. But I'm like, Nebraska's not a great team, and they weren't. They underachieved a little bit last year. But, I mean, Nebraska put Maryland into the earth. I mean, it was not a competitive game at all. So, like, when I was making the Big Ten rankings this year, and I knocked myself in the head because I know I put it on this podcast that I thought Michigan State and Maryland were going to be the two worst teams. But when it came time to do the rankings, I put Rutgers behind Michigan State, and I shouldn't have done that.
Force of habit.
It was. But Maryland is, to me, they're going to go 0-8. They're not going to win a game. 0-9. They're not winning a game.
Maryland, Michigan State, man, that's going to be something.
Oh, I think Michigan State will take it to them pretty good. Michigan State, their offense looked good enough against Rutgers that I think they could win two.
Okay.
I would not put it past them to beat Iowa. I just wouldn't. I think Michigan State's a little better than I thought. And Rutgers is about what I thought they'd be, and then I think Maryland's real bad.
So you're saying Michigan State can beat Iowa, but you're saying Iowa's going to beat Northwestern.
We'll see.
Okay.
I'm saying I don't know that until this weekend. I need to watch. If Iowa beats Northwestern this weekend and plays well, then yes. If Northwestern puts it to Iowa, I'm just telling you, that program has had a hard off season. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that this is Ferentz's last year, and those players may very well, if they start 0-2, they may disengage and just say, you know, yeah, this isn't looking good. So we're going to go ahead and turn the volume down on our give-a-crap factor. All right. Basketball news. There may be a schedule out today. I don't know. There's going to be a schedule soon in the Big Ten. Wouldn't put it past this league to release it Saturday morning at about 8:20.
How many games does Nebraska have, like, set on its schedule right now?
One?
Was that Georgia?
One. Set.
That's it. It's
Georgia Tech and the ACC Big Ten Challenge, but the MTE could involve six games in theory, because they're allowing teams to participate in multiple MTEs, and Nebraska in theory could set up a four or five game MTE. If you have 16 teams, well, technically that's four games, because you play your round of 16, round of 8, round of 4, championship. So they could, in theory, play four games in their MTE. I know they still want to play Creighton, but maybe in Omaha, and they just set the Georgia Tech game. So I don't know what they're going to – you know, exactly what they're going to do. I'm guessing that if they're allowed to play their MTE the way they want to, it could be three or four games, and it could be one of these deals where, you know, it's pretty – like, they have a hard game somewhere in there. But they're probably playing. They're also playing some teams that, you know, they would be favored over. So, but they'll, you know, we'll have to see what the final, what do you want to call it, roster of teams is. But I think it's going to be pretty good. And major credit to, you know, Matt Aldomasi and Fred Hoiberg and those guys and Bill Moose for being proactive and putting themselves in a position to do this, because I think it's pretty sharp. But they're forward thinkers in that Nebraska basketball program. They really are. they're always thinking ahead, and they have a vision. They needed the players that they had last year were not quite fits for the vision. And this is the way college basketball works. They got rid of most of those players. So, and they brought in new players, and those players are more of a fit. So, like,
wash, rinse, repeat.
All goes in this sport, right? Like, it's just, it's kind of how it is. It's like, yeah, well, this line shift didn't work, so we're going to bring in a new line. And they did. And I think they feel a lot better about who they are, and they're going to be way better at guard. And this is my own fault. When Chris was with us, I didn't really dial into this very well. Trey McGowan's is going to be, you know, really good. I mean, he was a starting guard in the ACC, and he was a good one. Like, he wasn't roadkill. I mean, he was like averaging 12 a game and getting to the rim all the time and two steals. And I'm like, this guy's really good. He's way better than anybody Nebraska had the year before. So, you know, he's Glenn Watson territory. He really is. And he's really good. So I misunderstood that, I think, in the offseason. And then, you know, Kobe Webster is a legit point guard who can get up and down the floor. And then this Lat Man guy, I mean, if he can average 10 points a game and hit three trios per game, that's better than they had last year, really, from anybody other than Thor. And Thor is only 6'5", or whatever he is. He's not 6'9". So when you have a 6'9" guy that can shoot that, you're either putting a 6'6" guy on him because you don't have a 6'9" guy that can go out and guard, or you're putting some giant 6'9" guy on him and he's getting his butt beat. So, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It changes the calculus of how the other team has to defend you, whereas Thor could be defended by a guard. Anyway, they're playing Georgia Tech in the ACC Big Ten Challenge, second year in a row. I can't tell you a damn thing about Georgia Tech. I'm still learning the college basketball ropes, and, you know, like, putting in some research time and all that. The Big Ten appears to be a monster league this year, which is fun. But I think Nebraska will be equipped to battle the monster. You know, they're going to be the kids at the end of Stranger Things 3. I think if you ever watched Stranger Things.
In the first two seasons. I haven't seen the third season.
And maybe it was just Stranger Things 2. I can't remember. They fight a big monster in a mall, I think, at the end of season 3.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think it was three. I can't remember. Anyway, let's do our picks. We're still even. We both went 8-4 last week. We have to remove a game from this list. That game is called Nebraska-Wisconsin.
Oh, that one.
Damn it. I was really looking forward to that.
I was too.
I was not really – I mean, I can say this now. I was looking forward to the start of the season with Nebraska-Ohio State, but I was not really, like, looking forward to, like, the implications of the game. I knew Ohio State was going to win. Everybody did. Yeah. So it's disappointing that they don't get to play Wisconsin this week, because I think we would have learned so much, and I think we would have learned some really good things about Nebraska. I think they had a real chance of winning the game.
Agreed.
Unfortunately, that is postponed until next week. Ready?
Let's do it.
Maryland, Minnesota. Tonight's game.
Minnesota.
Okay.
You're taking Maryland, right?
No, I'm going to take Minnesota. That's the game I put in because, I don't know, I mean, late notice, I decided to put that game in there because
of the record.
Memphis, Cincinnati. This is a big game for Cincy. They win this game, and I think they're in really good shape for a playoff bid.
That should be decent. I'm going to go Cincinnati.
I'm going Memphis. I think K-State at West Virginia. Always love this game.
Yeah, this is fun. Give me Kansas State.
I'm with you. K-State. Texas at Oklahoma State. If there's one thing Texas can do, they can score.
Yeah.
They can't stop anybody. But Oklahoma can't score, but they can stop everybody. True. What do we do?
Oklahoma State. They gave me some confidence points after beating Iowa State.
That was a good game.
Yeah.
I'll take Okie State as well. Boise Air Force. Give me Boise.
Yeah, same.
Ohio State, Penn State. I think we both want Ohio State there.
I think we do.
Arkansas, A&M.
A&M seems to be on the come here. Arkansas is too, but I think the Aggies.
This is a pretty long-held rivalry between these two teams. I'll take A&M, but I think it'll be competitive. Yeah. Purdue, Illinois, presuming the game is played. I know Illinois had a couple of COVID tests today, but I'll take I think that game's going to be really close. But I'll take Purdue.
I don't think it's going to be as close, and I'm also going to take Purdue.
Northwestern, Iowa, I'll take Iowa.
Give me Northwestern.
What do we got here? Hawaii, Wyoming.
We're digging deep.
Well, why not?
Who's the home team in that one?
Wyoming.
So Hawaii's traveling. I think that's the difference to me. Give me Wyoming.
I enjoyed going to that game out there the one year we did. I'll take Wyoming as well. UCF, Houston. Houston?
Houston. Central Florida.
Taking UCF. I'll take Houston. Houston. Gotta love them. And then, let's see, we need one more. The Baltimore Ravens against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
You don't want to do LSU-Auburn?
No. Do you? We can. Are they playing? Sure.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, let's do LSU-Auburn. That's fine.
I think that'll be a good game.
It will.
I'll take LSU.
You know what? Me too. I think Bo's guys are starting to figure it out a little bit.
They did last week, that's for sure.
Yeah, did it. All right, that's all the blabbing I'm going to be doing this week. Evan, what's your favorite Halloween candy?
Oh, that's a tie between Kit Kat and Twix. I'm a chocolate guy, so. Twix is great, yeah, especially the peanut butter Twix, but probably Kit Kat. It's got the crunch. It's fairly light, yeah. Give me Kit Kat. My anti-Halloween candy would be either candy corn or those orange puffy peanut things.
Oh, yeah.
Those are all disgusting to me. I don't understand how anyone could eat those.
You like the candy corn pumpkins, though?
I don't like candy corn anything, no. And it's – My when I was growing up, my grandma had a bowl of candy corn in her living room. And so I never understood it. Like, she always like, oh, take some candy. I'm like, this isn't candy. This is disgusting. So, I don't know. I've had a long-running feud with candy corn. But
that's probably about, you know, my grandma had what they call old-fashioned candy. Do you know what that is?
Is that those sucking candies?
Sucking candies, but not just Werther's or, like, you know, butterscotch candies and wrappers. But the kind of like ribbon candy that like looks like a macaroni.
Yeah.
And yeah, it would just be sitting there and, you know, it'd be kind of broken. And you're like, I'm not sure somebody didn't have some of that candy already.
Ugh.
And it was in a metal dish. And there were Werther's there and there were, you know, butterscotch candies. And there was a cinnamon candy that I rather liked. But yeah, there was just hard candy. That was the candy of your was hard candy. The candy of yay or today, I don't know, is like also fruity, but it's like, you know, Sour Patch. And like my daughter's favorite candy is like Sour This and Sour That and Mike and Ike Mix and, you know, all this other stuff. My son, on the other hand, likes chocolate. So He likes chocolate. My favorite Halloween candies, if I had to pick two, if we're just talking Halloween candy, not regular candy, because Halloween and regular are a little different.
What's the difference?
Well, a mini Nestle Crunch tastes better than a big Nestle Crunch. Like a little mini Crunch, that's a better tasting candy bar than the big Crunch.
Interesting. I don't know that I agree, but I'm fascinated by your
here's another example.
Perspective.
Here's another example. I don't really like chocolate bars, you know, like a big chocolate bar, like a Hershey's chocolate bar, but a little miniature or a Hershey Kiss, I can eat a couple of those. That tastes better to me than a whole chocolate bar.
Mm.
But my favorite two candies, if we're talking Halloween candy, are Nestle Crunch and 100 Grand.
Mm.
The little mini 100 Grand, you know. The,
yeah, little red wrappers, yeah.
Looks kind of like a lump of poop. Doesn't taste like one, though.
That's fantastic. You know, that would work out well because we could do some trading. I would give you all my 100 Grands for your Snickers and your Kit Kats. And then I just give you my Three Musketeers bars for free because those are gross. But
that is apparently my mother's favorite candy is Three Musketeers. Yeah. I'm like, Mom, why? I don't really understand it. You melt those down and put them on like cookies or something. Yeah, you don't eat them. Anyway. Gosh, I wish I was covering a football game this weekend, but I'm not. So it's yard work and Halloween and watching some football on TV. And we wish everybody out there be safe. Hey, there's a lot of hospitalizations in the state right now. There's a lot of cases going around. Be smart. Be safe. This Halloween. All the rest. You know, you don't have to necessarily worry about the razor blades in the candy bars like we did when we were kids. You have to worry about making sure that your kids are safe as it relates to COVID. So have a good Halloween, everybody. Stay safe, and we'll be back next week to talk about an actual football game. So help me God if we don't.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.